On this episode of Interview in Indies, we talk to Jeff and Than from Pocket Moon Games and talk about the struggles of getting your foot into the indie sphere and their recently released game Wormhole. If you want to get the episodes a few days early and support the show, you can find us over on Patreon. And of course, enjoy the show. Hello, welcome to Interview in Indies, episode 13. I'm the host, Burr, and today I'm joined by Jeff and Than from Pocket Moon Games. Jeff and Than, thanks for joining me today.
Cheers.
Hello. Yeah, how's it going?
Oh, it's, well, it took me a while to get this intro going, as you guys got to see, but
it was great.
Coming up here, we love you.
Yeah, yeah. It was the best intro that we had. Luckily, the viewers don't get to see that. But my question, first question always to every developer, you guys can take your turns answering, but what's the history of your game development? How did you become indie developers?
I started making games back in 2017 with a friend of mine, learned a lot of stuff, and then in 2020, we started a different studio called Pocket Moon Games, where we met Than, this guy. And we actually like originally started making this game completely different than Wormhole. It was like heavily narrative focused. It was all based on music and like platforming. It was this sort of combo of like platforming and rhythm games, trying to make like a story out of them. And honestly, like it being our first game, I think it was a little bit ambitious. So
it was a bit ambitious.
Took a step back. Yeah, I love the concept, but I'm glad we did this because like we ended up making this sort of game gem called Sunsplit, which was like a little RPG that we wanted to make in a week. And of course, when you want to make something in a week, it always turns out into a month and then 3 months and then, you know. But within that game, there was this like mini game that you'd play where all the characters would huddle around this arcade machine. And the idea was like, if you play the arcade machine in the game, you get XP for your characters. So like you could sort of, you could grind by fighting enemies or you could go to this arcade machine and just like get a bunch of points. So I figured, okay, what's the like, this most straightforward game that we could make like really quick and just put into the game. I was like, okay, Snake. It's like, you know, Nokia phone, you go around. So I told the team, loved it. We said, okay, we're going to make this into a game jam. So we're going to take 1 week with this and then see what happens. We'll put it in the game and then we'll continue with Sunsplit.
And we did it in a week.
We did do it in a week, but
we did it having, and it's out.
We had so much fun making it that we just sort of like, but what if this? What if we push it a little further? Just like, I see where this is going. Let's try just like inching it this way. Anyway, again, 1 week turned into 3 months, turned into a year, turned into 3 years. And here we are.
Wormhole. Yeah. No, he nailed it. That's exactly it. We are a team of creatives, three artists, and when you have three artists who are very creative minded, scope creep becomes a very big thing. And in this case, it really worked out. We're really happy with the game. But yeah, it took us two other games to get here.
Yeah.
Now, so Wormhole started out in an arcade machine in a game jam for another game, and then the other game kind of just completely got scrapped.
Put on the back burner.
On the back burner. Okay. Than, is
our
was
back
this
burner
your
has a lot of things on it.
Everybody's does. Was this your like first project then, or how did you get into
I mean, I've been making little crap games since I was like 10 years old. With Game Maker. I don't really have much of like a coding background professionally. I was a graphic designer. And I ended up making a game during my graphic design job, a few years ago, called Nina. It was a proposal to my wife, but I ended up having scope creep with that one, making it take 2 years, and it's a full game. And yeah, you can get it on Steam. It's a passion project. We loved it. That's how they found me. And yeah, no, I had a lot of fun with it. And since then I've really fallen in love with dev. I am a programmer now over graphic design, and Wormhole was just kind of like our trial through fire in a way, because we've worked on some other things, but this is a game that we really like went start to finish. like added all that polish. Like we've been done this game for a year and a half now. But it really was like every little thing we could put out of it. That's where I think we really became a team. But yeah, no, I started for a while ago.
So
as a youngin'.
Do you have like any games on like itch.io from those little crappy games that you made? Fun little things.
Sure. I mean, like Yo-Yo Games is where I had all my stuff on. I don't think you can even get them anymore. I have them on a hard drive that no one is ever going to see ever.
Are you sure we're not going to?
They're not good.
Like 10 years from now, when you're big, rich, and famous, we can be like, "This is Than's old school collection. Get it for $29.99."
I watched a video on Scott Cawthorne, like the Five Nights at Freddy's dev, and like watched all of his games and the progression to Five Nights at Freddy's, which I'm not like a fan of, but like I respect for what it did. And I was kind of like, oh, this is really interesting. You can see his journey from start to finish, and some of these games look great. But also, if someone did that for me, I would be horrified. It's just like, it's the same thing as like taking an artist's sketchbook and seeing all like the things that they're not happy with or not ready to go out with. Like, there's so much junk that I've made that like have helped me become a better dev, but doesn't need to see the light of day. It's not a historical record. I'm like, we're just guys. But that being said, like we've done some game jams and stuff. I don't know if I have anything typically like actually noteworthy on itch aside from like Nina and maybe a game jam or two that kind of suck, but yeah, no.
No, that hard drive with those games.
Put in a shredder.
You've made a video game though. Like,
I'm confident about this one. This game's great.
Wormhole is great. I will admit to that. And oh, come on, give me that. You got a poster
behind available now. I don't know if you.
It is available now. We will get to Wormhole for sure. So, Than, you mentioned that you made that game for your wife, The Proposal. Now, I want to get back to Jeff for a second. You and your partner, you both work at Pocket Moon Games, correct?
That's right.
I want to ask, what are some positives and potentially negatives, I imagine maybe there's none, about working with your partner in a more professional setting with indie games?
Well, the problem is with indie games, like, it occupies 100% of my brain all the time. And I'm with my partner most of the time, which is Ren, who's the third member, we should say. Shout out to Ren. But yeah, it's tricky because there's a work-life balance that is hard when you're working from home and your partner's living at home. And it's like, when does the game dev shut off and when does the partner kick in? So we've worked for, I think, well, it's been about, we started in 2020, so it's been 4 years now. So we sort of found a balance now, but there were definitely some rocky spots of like, I'm just so hyper fixated on this one mechanic and I can't wait to tell you about it. And Than's doing this thing and it's looking amazing and I'm working on art and they're like, cool, I just want to like chill out for a bit after my cafe job. But you know, so it's been great though. It's been great. Definitely some challenges. Caution to those who are interested in trying, but for us, A+. It's worked out.
It's worked out for both of you. So they work part-time. Are both of you full-time indie developers, or?
So I work at the same cafe that Ren works. So not only do we work game dev together, we also work at the cafe together. So it's a very, very close-knit relationship.
I can tell. I love that, though. Than, what about you? Are you a full-time developer, or are you also working out on the side?
Currently, yeah. I do some contract jobs every so often. Last year, for about 2 years, I was teaching kids to code, which was an amazing job. And shout out to Real Programming for Kids. That is a legit name. They're great. Super, super understanding about my schedule with working on game dev, and I eventually exited to finish Wormhole. But yeah, no, I am currently full-time game dev. I don't know if that will change with how money goes, but, yeah.
Everyone buy Wormhole, please.
Everyone buy Wormhole. Should buy Don't make Wormhole. Me get a real job.
A real job. Come on, game developers are the
oh dear God,
the true heroes yeah. in the world.
Saying real job as if game dev doesn't take like 18 hours a day.
I know. I say that about like content creation because like I'm somehow mm-hmm. like a full time creator. I'm just like, do I have to get like a real job? And then I think I work more than like, I guess, a quote unquote yeah. real job.
That's the thing about working from home is like your boundaries dissolve. So I love working from home. It is like, this is my workspace. This is my safe space. I feel the most comfortable doing it with no one over my shoulder. But also, yeah, I will wake up at like 7 a.m. and work till 4 a.m. And like, that's oh. no good.
Yeah, that's
why
not,
is that happening?
That's not healthy.
I need a manager.
We're saying well, this. Yeah,
Jeff and Ren are great at messaging me. Yeah, yeah, Jeff and Ren are great at messaging me and being like, hey, how's
you should
it
probably
going?
Stop working, maybe?
Yeah.
Going...
I'll be like, one more thing.
I guess I can ask this for Jeff. Would you get into the full-time indie sphere? Like, what are the analytics needed for you? Because I know you guys live in Canada as well, and Canada can be pretty expensive. So what are some analytics that would maybe push you to be full-time?
Just give us some money, and then I can do that. That's about it, honestly. I'm so committed. Like, this is my passion. I'm fully in. It just comes down to financial stuff. Yeah. So...
I'll get more into
boring answer, but
no,
yeah.
it's not that ain't boring. That's the yeah. truth. I'll get more into that with Wormhole discussions. But before we jump into Wormhole, let's get a little more personal and favorite games growing up. I like to hear some maybe small inspirations. Any favorite games? We can go with you, Jeff, first.
The games I really like have nothing to do with Wormhole, but maybe somewhere in there, there's some DNA. But like Shadow of the Colossus, Journey, Downwell, which is pretty Wormhole, but like those, I'd say those are my main ones. Like those Last Guardian,
pretty good.
Throw an Eco, why not? Complete the trio.
Get an Eco in there, yeah.
But yeah, definitely more like of the artsy side of things, like less like gameplay mechanic heavy, and more like story and atmosphere based. But I've always loved arcade games and just like how snappy they are and how you can sort of jump in and jump out, and they become they're more of like a part of you than they are like a game that you can necessarily like tell your friends about. It's like, how do I rephrase this? It's like Pac-Man is, it sounds tacky, but it's like it becomes sort of a part of you after a while. Like it's almost a personality trait where like you go to the arcade and Pac-Man's my machine. I'm gonna go and I'm gonna do Pac-Man. So I love that about arcade games. Like, they sort of become a part of you. And, hey, maybe Wormhole is going to be a part of someone as well. So,
in a way, we're all Pac-Man.
You know, Than?
Right. Very wise by Than. That's a quote that you can put on the fridge. We're all Pac-Man.
In a way, we're all Pac-Man.
Well, but no, that's Than, no, any that of your really favorite good. Games besides Pac-Man?
I mean, well, Pac-Man. Is great. No, Jeff really, well, Miss Pac-Man. Miss Pac-Man's the better opinion. Jeff was exactly right about arcade games and like what they say for like when you show up in a room and it's like, I go for the Dig Dug or the Galaga machine first thing. And those two are definitely like some of the bigger influences on my end for Wormhole. Growing up, like I'm a 90s kid, so I didn't have the 80s, 70s arcade, but I did grow up playing Namco Museum and Atari Anthology and those kind of things that brought those back. So I did spend a disproportionate amount of time playing Galaga, Dig Dug, Miss Pac-Man, that kind of stuff. So that definitely influenced Wormhole in a lot of ways. But outside of that, I'm just a retro games buff in general. I have like all my weird devices here. I love Mario Bros. 3, Tetris, anything in that ballpark. But aside from that, I mean, like, just like what I like to play outside of like my passion interest is probably like Smash Bros, Halo, like typical boy stuff.
COD. Out of Warzone.
God. I play a lot of Risk of Rain, which is very directly inspiration for Wormhole.
Yes.
I don't know. All the good games. Yeah.
I mean, there's
Elden Ring when I was a kid playing Elden Ring.
You were playing Elden Ring in 2003. You had it before anybody else. I mean, all of those are great games.
How about you? What's your three
games I loved growing up?
Top three in order.
No, like of all time or growing
we're
up?
We're giving you, I see.
Define you.
Define me. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the past 5 years, Darkest Dungeon has become one of my go-to games. So
nice.
Gotta throw Darkest Dungeon. I'll say Paper Mario, the original Paper Mario. Mm-hmm. Love the art direction for that one. And I feel the story is just a perfect length. Sit down, few days, few sessions, bust it out. And then, three. Trying to think of a game that I also just love. Star Fox 64. That I played that game love like it. Every single day as a kid. That's a classic.
We're talking arcade games.
Yeah, that's a classic one right there.
I think there's something to be said for games that you can beat in like 2 hours.
Yeah,
but you just keep coming back to them.
Yeah, you just pick it up, play it, and it's a great time. And you're just like, you know, I could do that again. I love a good short game. I love a good long game too. Metaphor, ReFantazio. I haven't played that, but people say that's great. It's 100 hours,
I'm like 120 hours into Persona, or 19. I have like one more hour, and I just haven't done it yet, but they're great. Great.
Short games are great. Long games are great. All games are great. You know what's great?
Medium
Wormhole.
Games. Wormhole.
I heard of that
Wormhole. That's a good transition right there. You see, now we can talk Wormhole. That's the big game that came out for you October 31st. I know the date. I did research. And the way I found Wormhole, it was interesting, actually, because I didn't even mean to find it. It was during the Steam Next Fest, and Pocket Moon Games came into my Twitch chat. I don't know who's in charge of the
Pocket. That was Bren.
Okay. They
Bren, the best one of talking out of the three of us, and you got us, too.
I mean, I'm happy to have y'all. They came in the chat, and I was just like saying, all right, if there's any developers in here, throw me your game. And they were like,
that's awesome.
Wormhole. And I was like, all right. And then it took like 3 to 4 days for it to, I had a wheel of 31 games and I was just spinning it.
I remember.
Wormhole 5. You guys were the only devs that actually like consistently came in still and still hang out. But Wormhole came on and it was absolutely the sleeper pick is what I call it. The sleeper pick of the Next Fest. So I want to ask, both of you can chime in on this. How much do you think the Next Fest has helped for Wormhole?
I think... Do you want to go? Okay. I think, honestly, like, people like you and Phalia, like, content creators picking it up and, like, giving it a platform, that was the biggest thing about Next Fest. Like, we had a lot of, like, demo downloads, but I'd say probably most of them were due to, like, Twitch streamers and stuff, so... Mm-hmm. Like, shout out to you. Thank you very much, honestly.
Yeah.
Oh, please. It was a great game. Please.
Championed our game.
Yeah. I'm still championing it. So just content creators helping it. Because I love Steam Next Fest. It's always a pretty busy time. But picking up just a random game.
This is a lot more like Ren's territory. They're a lot more into the like analytics of stuff. Especially with Steam. But like, yeah, it's kind of tricky to break through at a certain point with Next Fest. Because the most popular ones sort of rise to the top, and then people just keep checking out the most popular ones. So yeah, shout out to people like you who sort of like dig a little deeper and get the other stuff. But yeah, I'd say again, if it wasn't for like people like you checking it out, it would not have been like a big thing. So
now what did you search out for a publisher? This can come into the going full time. Did you try to reach out to publishers and just nothing landed?
We
think emotionally we reached out to publishers.
We like sent emails that were very like, hey, this is our game. Bye. Essentially, because we were debating the entire development process. Do we get publishers involved? Do we not? How do we sell Snake but cooler? And honestly, it just came down to like, we want to fully own this. But we did send it out to a few publishers, like just like kind of cold emails of like, hey, Big Mode.
Literally like, stuff like the that. Last week before the game came out. We were
like, you know what? Like Funky. Basically not even actually publishing, just like getting our name out there, which maybe we'll visit publishers next time. But Yeah, we really just wanted to own this project ourselves. We very much weren't in it to like make money. I think the big goal for us was to kind of have a small community of people passionate about the game. And I think we've succeeded on all stops there. Like, yeah, this isn't like a huge moneymaker game. And if it made a ton of money, oh, that'd be awesome. But like what makes a bigger deal to us is the people who have searched and found this game and like are willing to meet us like halfway to finding it and just like talking about it and discovering new things about it. That's been what's really cool. So yeah, we cold emailed some publishers. We have a friend who's a publisher at Raw Fury, or he works at Raw Fury. And we talked to him a lot about like what the process is like. But in the end, yeah, we decided to do our own thing. I think maybe next game or the game after that or the game after that or the game after that
or the game after that one.
Well, maybe the game after that we'll consider reaching out to a publisher, but we have to be really sure that they're a good fit.
Well, and another thing is like in terms of scope, like again, this started off as a week like game jam, so it never really like passed that mentality of like, okay, the game's done, honestly, let's just put it out like next month, like it's fine. And then a year would go by and like, you know, let's just put it out. So when it came to like pitching to publishers, it was kind of a tricky thing because it's like, okay, well, what more do we have to do to get this game done? And like, what do we want from them so we can make this game finished? And every time we asked ourselves, that's okay. Every time we asked ourselves, it was like, well, they can't really do anything right now. So honestly, let's just do it ourselves. And then it would be this sort of like roller coaster of actually, you know, we should reach out to people and this is a clever thing. And like, we're trying to sort of build some like industry relationships. Like this is the perfect game to do it. And then we'd go back to like, you know what? Let's just push it out. So I think scope was a big thing, a big factor why we didn't end up going with a publisher or even really pitching too much to them. Just cause like, yeah, we didn't really think that it was necessary, even though in retrospect, I think it would have been pretty cool to have some more PR budget for sure.
You're going to say something to add on to that?
Well, I think to add to that, like it really was two things that we could use from them, which was marketing and localization. The big third one that usually people go to publishers for is porting. And we did the Switch port in-house. So we're like, that's such a huge value add that we might be like having to negotiate with publishers. And eventually we decided like we can handle most of the stuff on our own and then potentially expand if someone reaches out, hey, publishers, if you think you're a good fit, let us know. But also, yeah, we're hesitant to sign up to like just any deal. We really want it to be a good fit. We want our game to be known and marketed, but we also want it done right. And I think we prefer, like, we're happy with the community we have, so we don't want to tarnish anything. That sounds really negative towards publishers, but you got to be careful. There's really great publishers.
There's a lot of publishers.
Really, really predatory ones.
I hear stories all the time of indie developers, you know, making a game, a passion project, but they get the first offer they find for a publisher and they just jump on it immediately. Publisher doesn't really do anything for them, and then they don't really make any money like from their project. Which continue.
That's exactly it. It's so many things, and it's like, especially when you're a not known dev, like we aren't very well known in the community yet. It's very easy to take advantage of that and be like, hey, we can make your name known and we can get you exposure and that kind of thing. I think Wormhole is a really great debut because even if it doesn't reach Bellatro appeal, like people can see the game and recognize the work and love and passion we put into it and see that we've done a good job with something and that we can be taken seriously. Before this, we didn't have a game under Pocket Moon, so a publisher could look at us and be like, they're just whatever company, like we can do whatever we want. This gives us some bargaining power for whatever we work on next. It's a really good foot forward, and I think it's a really good debut for Pocket Moon Games. It gets our name in the pool of a million indies a day, but it's a good step.
You mentioned Balatro, which is obviously probably the biggest indie game that's come out in years, you could say. And you mentioned that you wanted to make the game, small community, gather that. That just reminds me that Balatro, the developer, Local Thunk, he started making that game with just a couple friends because he thought it was just a funny idea. And then next thing you know, it's nominated for the Game Awards Game of the Year, 6 nominations all across. I call it the Jeff Keighley Show, but I guess, would you say that doing everything yourself, what is the biggest struggle? Is it just marketing?
There are a couple.
I mean,
I would say the biggest struggle that we're still working on is burnout. Like, we would go, because again, with scope, I keep saying it, but we're rushing to get this thing done and it's almost done anyway, so we may as well just push a little bit further. We would burn out a lot. Like, probably every month we would get set back like a week of burnout. Especially Than can like really get into the weeds with it. So it would be like 4 in the morning and Than's like pushing updates. I'm like, no, Than, please go to sleep. And this, like the next day is like, guys, I think I got to take some time. Like, honestly, yeah, please take your, like, look after yourself. But it's like, it took 3 years to make, but a lot of that was just like us burning out and like this cycle of just like always sort of running out of steam. Luckily we're in like a lot better of a place. I think we've been like really monitoring each other's activities for like making sure we don't overdo it. But yeah, for us, I think from my point of view, I think that was the biggest struggle. It's just like learning our boundaries and also recognizing the symptoms of burnout.
For me, it was porting, but also burnout. porting was tough, but no, yeah, he's exactly right. Burnout is a very real and damaging thing. And there was a few times where it was like, is Than coming back? Cause, I mean, there was one instance where I basically had like a full on meltdown. I was like, I can't do this. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, this is just Snake, guys. Why are we making Snake? And it was like almost a full year of me just like not able to chip in properly, like physically unable to do what I wanted to do with the project. And Jeff and Ren were so patient with me. I'm still super grateful for them for this because, this project wouldn't have gotten done if they weren't so just kind and patient and encouraging, and obviously helpful at what they do, the art and music and marketing and everything that makes Wormhole special. Burnout sucks, and I have very specifically like hyper focus issues that I'm working on. Essentially, like, I can just sit down and be like, oh, I'm going to work on this for 2 minutes, and it'll be like 10 hours later. And we've been in that phase for the past 2 months since like this release. It has been me kind of hyper focusing again, kind of to get things done, but it's been a lot healthier. We've been taking breaks. And we are taking December off, which I'm very excited for, and just like chilling. Yeah, we have a patch coming out in the next few days. And then aside from hot fixes, we're going to save the rest for the next year. You think that like, oh, if I burn another 6 hours today, then I won't, then I'll get more done. But that time, you're eating twice that much time in how much you're going to need to rest. And it sucks. It really sucks because you feel like you want to be doing this. You can sit down at your computer and like, I can do this. And it's just this weight of like despair, of defeat, of this is never getting done. This, like, how am I going to continue doing this? And we all experienced it, our team. I think we've gotten really good at talking with each other. And our meetings always start with Jeff going like, how we feeling?
Good way to start.
And it's like something I look forward to. Yeah, it's great. And it really keeps things going smooth. But burnout is definitely most difficult thing. Porting up there too.
Oh, porting. Oh my god, you are a hero.
I guess go continue, Jeff.
I just wanted to say also, like, it's tricky when you are making a game that's so specific. Like, it's a very niche product we've made where it's one bit black and white. Well, with palettes you can do whatever, but two-tone arcade game that's Snake. And it's like you show your friends and your colleagues or your parents and they're like, huh, okay, that's cool. Like, you're still working on this, I guess. And then after a while, like, you're sort of, you're looking for that, like, congratulatory effect, but you've just been showing the same people the same thing, well, seemingly the same thing for like 3 years, and the response just slowly gets less and less and less excited.
You're still doing this, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So
they don't see all the work that goes into it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're done. Like, it's over. Like, one, no, it's so not over. And two, like, yeah, but also we did a cool thing.
Like, so much of Wormhole is all under the hood. It's just, it's Than and I talking about, like, little tiny game mechanic tweaks and Than, like, coding the hell out of it. And, like, you show it to someone and they're like, cool, it doesn't look any different. But when you play it, or, like, there's just this tiny little detail that, like, this thing occurs when this, or now it does this instead, just to, like, help with player feedback. And it's so hard to show people that who aren't, like, into it like we are. So,
like, oh, yeah, good job. You really added, like, an input buffer.
But it changes things. And then Ren's like, I just go back from the cafe. Why are you telling me this? And
But to the other side of that, it was like, up until release, we are like, this is great. We love this project. We're not feeling that love from the people around us because they've been seeing us toiling and burning out over essentially like a Snake remake. And I'm saying that in the loosest term. I love this project, but we loved it. And we have support. Our friends and family are amazing. I don't mean to say that they weren't supportive. But yeah, like, you look at this project so much and you're like, what are they doing? Why is this taking them so long? And I had people sit me down and be like, you're done. Like, put this game out. Move on. And I'm like, no, but I need, like, and so when we put out the demo in NextFest and we had streamers playing it and we had, and then finally released the game, I think we found the community of people who are, like, genuinely interested, like, people who are looking out for these games and playing arcade games and, like, see what we wanted people to see in it. And that's been really fulfilling. Having people talk about the meta and strats and, like, figure out new things. I remember watching Faye get the high score and constantly was getting juice, and I was like, I hate the juice perk. Why would they get the juice perk? And then I started using the juice perk, and that's why I'm the top of the leaderboard right now, is because I started using Faye's strategy. It really is just, like, this fulfilling, unfortunately, like, a bit validating, which I hate the fact that I have to search for that, but this feeling of just, like, oh, we have a community that understands, like, this is not just, like, a Snake game. This is an arcade game that we really wanted to push and, like, get people to really master it. I remember saying to Jeff, like, the goal for this game for me is to get people to be better than me at it. And... like, Jeff and I are both, like, we actively compete with each other on this game throughout development. And so it's really nice to see people kind of joining in on that. And we have, like, people fighting for the leaderboards, and we have antagonists on the leaderboards, and we have these things that, like, the community is kind of working towards. And it's, that's the coolest thing. Yeah, that's why we're doing this.
The antagonist of the leaderboard, is that the guy with, like, the cryptocurrency in his name?
The whole can of worms.
Yeah,
the whole can of worms.
That guy's all the way up there.
Yeah, it's weird because, like, I won't get too much into it, but yeah, it's advertising crypto in his name. So it was like, what do we do about this? And we were like, we could just remove it, but that didn't feel fun, so we're like, okay,
a really good score, like
knock him off the leaderboard.
Yeah,
then
they do have some good scores up there.
6 million in marathon. No, he's too good. I can't just, like, take him off. He'll get it back again. And also, like, I don't know, you got the record fair and square. People kept asking me, is he cheating somehow? I'm like, I feel like I would know. I don't know if there's any like cheats you can do in the game, but maybe. I don't know. I don't think so. I think he's just very good. And so, yeah, it's been fun to be like, oh, everyone, we got to knock him off the leaderboard so our leaderboard isn't advertising crypto. yeah.
Now, I guess I can bring it back to your nightmares. Sorry for bringing up your nightmares, but you did port this game to Switch. You know I'm going to ask, what about Xbox and PlayStation, the other two big pillars?
If we get dev kits and the right support for it, we're all in. The Switch happened because Jeff and Ren, for a previous project, got a Switch dev kit. I think before we really knew what we were getting into, but when they got it, I was like, oh, hey, I would love to port Nina for the Switch. And so I did that and like learned how Switch porting works, which is a nightmare. And I'm not gonna talk too much about that, but like just consoles in general. Love you, Nintendo. Don't take our game off your platform. But it's hard when you're a small team of three and all of the documentation and instructions are for like a double to triple A studio. You're handling a lot of things and you've got Steam, which is like such a turnkey. I hate using that word, but it's a turnkey solution to putting a game out. You pay them $100 and then like you put it up there and they like say, yep, that's not a virus, you're good. And you can have a patch out in minutes. Nintendo, you have lot check. You have to go through days, if not weeks, of back and forth of like, hey, if I load the leaderboard and I change my router password when loading the leaderboard, it should show this specific error, but it's not. So here, I'm going to send this back as a failure. And it's like that over and over again. Consoles, I think, in general, are like that. We are talking to a friend of ours, and she was saying, like, yeah, just consoles in general. They're old studio stuff. Like, Steam's a very new thing still. And they're just constantly innovating, while consoles have that back end of like since the Atari days. So there's a very like old professionalism involved with like departments and like different phases. So all that to say is if we have the capacity and the money for a dev kit and the proper documentation, like we can do it. It's Unity. So that makes the process a lot easier for porting. Not foolproof, but yeah, a lot easier. We are looking at porting options for some things.
Does that answer your question? Mobile would probably come before Xbox mobile and PlayStation.
Especially because the Switch is essentially just like a mobile console. Like we had to do a lot of optimization to make that work. So the hope is that we can kind of use that performance on the mobile phones. It really just comes down to like using Apple and Google's APIs and all that kind of stuff.
I mean, mobile was definitely a good way to go. I mean,
it would be very cool.
Bring up Balatro again. They ported it to mobile six months after release, and it's the number one selling game, which is impressive because Minecraft is there, which I've never
and really I've seen. Heard. I've seen Devolver do the same thing. They put Gree, they put Carrion. I think it's Carrion.
Downwell.
Yeah, so like
where I first played it,
it's kind of the thing right now. And like Vampire Survivors, for example, like I think they released it just before the Game Awards and it was like this mega hit. Like it was already a hit, but like I downloaded it and they had a really good like monetization model where like you didn't pay for anything except for like if you wanted an extra life, you'd like watch an ad, which is like, oh my god, that's great. That's how you do it. But yeah, it's like it's kind of come back around now to like indie games coming back to a mobile space, which is kind of neat. They're not just like Jetpack Joyride. No disrespect to Jetpack Joyride for all the fans out there.
I still don't even know what Jetpack Joyride is, really.
Man, Bird, do your research, goddammit.
I should have known we would be talking about it.
Come on, I told you this.
Wormhole, Jetpack Joyride?
But I think like in terms of the mobile space, as someone who has made a mobile game, like there's a very dirty connotation to like putting your game on a mobile space because it's associated so heavily with like microtransactions. And just like it's what moms play and kids play. But now that people are taking it more seriously with like, I mean, I don't love Apple Arcade, but things like Apple Arcade where they're like giving these more like it's more premium appeal to like these games. It's an interesting time. So
I mean, there's been a lot of pretty good games that come from Apple Arcade and then they get on the Steam. Like Exit the Gungeon was one of them. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was Apple Arcade. Mm-hmm. So 100% mobile is coming back. This is
Bleak Sword.
Bleak Sword.
Shout out to Bleak Sword.
Bleak Sword's a really good game. That's a really good game.
Pretty good.
Peglin's on mobile as well. There's roguelites and mobile. They go really well together. A YouTube comment just told me that they were like, hey, you should make a video talking about mobile games. And I'm just like, my first thought was like what you were thinking. It's like, microtransactions, all that. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. They're kind of right. Mobile games are kind of everywhere now. And well, they've been everywhere for 12 years, but they're kind of, coming back to being a well-made, thought-out game and not just disrespect to Clash of Clans. I played that in high school. Mobile games are great. Mobile games are great. I'm trying to see if I have any more wormhole questions. You guys kind of killed all my wormhole questions, which was great because wormhole's a great game. But I guess we could talk about the other game that you slightly mentioned in the beginning that you were working on before, the rhythm platformer game, which was, I'm going to see if this is the right one. I did a little bit of research. Fantaphone.
I did some research.
I guess we could ask. You said it was a big task for a first game. What were some challenges with making a rhythm game, I guess?
Well, so, a few games. Yes. So just to give you an idea of the scope, it was fully hand-drawn, similar to Gris or Gris, whatever you prefer. It had a platforming element that tied into a rhythm game element. And we wanted to use the music to tell a story. So immediately you have, before Fantaphone, I had never done animation really. Like I did some pixel art stuff, but never hand drawn animation. It's that was a huge undertaking. Writing a story that is compelling enough to link music and this narrative that we're trying to really pull on people's heartstrings with. That was a difficulty. I'm sure we'd have branching dialogue because, everyone loves branching dialogue. But that's another thing. And it's at that time we were working with a masked musician, Slow Magic. Shout out to Slow Magic, who would be doing the soundtrack. So we'd be collaborating with him. But basically, all in all, there were so many moving parts with us being a new team who has never worked together that was it was just very overwhelming. And we got some stuff done. Than did an amazing job with the rhythm game element, which
I still really think that
I think we can come back to it.
The game itself is something special. I mean, everything about the game was really special. They sold me when they pitched it to me. It's something that, I think we want to revisit, but we want to do it right. So I've said to the team, I'm so happy to do this, but we need another dev just to kind of balance out the workload. It's something I think we all would love to do and are planning on working our way up to. Wormhole was a really great step of I think by the end, we finally got our process down of how we work together and how to work together and how to handle game documentation and that kind of thing, that I think the next time we visit the project, we'll be able to kind of just plan it out better and hit the ground running with it. Because we all have the vision of what it's supposed to be and what we want it to be. I think we just didn't have the tool set at the time. But now, I think that we're at that capability. All of us on the team really know the processes of every step of game development and how that ties into what we all do as a team, each of us.
I'd also say
that was all I had to say.
I was just going to say, I would also say, I think Wormhole is maybe the polar opposite of what Fantaphone is.
It's so
which
opposite.
It's sort of not by accident, where we spent a full year of just working on this story and it's all hand drawn. It's this beautiful thing. And then Wormhole is there's no dialogue. There's no really characters. I mean, there's the different worms, but
the cowboy worm. My favorite.
That guy, he's got a big backstory, believe me.
We were working on Fanaphone, and the whole time playing like really high intensity games outside of it, because like it was a very like cozy like wave of an experience, and I think at one point we're kind of like not bored, but like a bit unstimulated. And so when we worked on Wormhole, we're like, let's just crank it up.
Action. Nothing but action.
Yeah. Which I think we really are like, I think that's maybe one of our best things that we collaborate on. We follow the Vlambeer guide and juicing it and screen shake. So shout out to Vlambeer.
Shout out.
Yeah.
And just like, yeah. In some of the like descriptions, we have it listed as a hyper-focused arcade action game, which we say hyper-focused because it's like there's not a lot going on outside of the pure gameplay. We wanted to just absolutely hone in on like every little tiny mechanic and making it feel the best that it can possibly feel. Mm-hmm. So it's so focused in doing exactly what it's supposed to be doing. There's no extra fluff. I mean, there's palettes and stuff, but that's like to bring you back into the game. But there's no story. It's just pure, like, arcade action. Which, again, it's the opposite of Fantaphone.
Yeah. Do you think we will implement a little bit more action if you revisit Fantaphone or keep it the way it is?
I mean, like, I think we would maybe not action, but juice. Because I think we really loved, like, almost, like, the cathartic, somber, heartfelt vibe that Fantaphone was going for. And it was funny, it was witty. I mean, if I were to like relate it to anything without directly being like, it's like this, like Night in the Woods was a very similar like kind of cozy, like you're walking around talking to people vibe. And it was a lot of inspiration for how we managed like that portion of the game. But then the rhythm game, we wanted to bring that together with like just a very like kind of overwhelming emotional experience of whatever the person's feeling. So at times, yeah, there could be high intensity or action. But a lot of the time it was this feeling of catharsis, the feeling of working through something that we really wanted to channel. I think Jeff can speak better to that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the action would, yeah, it'd be poured into the juice. It would be more in the like rhythm game section. Because essentially, like, just to give you a brief summary of what the music was, it was like, it was two like vinyl records like converging to one point, and then you would use the analog sticks to like do the inputs. So it's pretty cool, and then you could like use the triggers for like certain different notes.
It was very satisfying.
It was very satisfying. So
it's a very good game.
It's good. It's good. There's a lot of other components that need to click first before it's ready to be like fully put into development.
Now you're taking a whole month off in December. Smart choice. I hear devs do that all the time, honestly, with how much you have to work. Is there any other games in the back of your mind that kind of just like popped up, kind of like Wormhole, that you think you might want to tackle? Obviously it might be too early to say, but
Wormhole.
Like there's Wormhole and then there's Fantaphone, but is there anything in between?
I would love to, when you beat Wormhole, Sunsplit, which is the game that Wormhole was originally going to be in, it starts and then you just play this whole RPG. But I don't know. I think I would really like to make Sunsplit. We had a lot of fun putting some time into
it,
that.
It definitely would be like, it would be the revisiting of like, can we work within a scope? Yeah, I think Sunsplit is a great contained experience. Very earthbound, like top-down RPG that we were just like, we're just making this for us. We're making this for fun. And I think that's probably what we're going to do as a team. I don't know next, but like something that we're definitely like very soon, I think, is what we're going to work on. Aside from that, we have some content updates we want to do for Wormhole when the year's up again, because we just finished an update that I've been calling internally as like the director's cut, which is like all the things we wanted to do last month that like are really going to polish the game to the point where we're like, finally, like this is everything we wanted it to be. Beyond that, content updates, new perks, abilities, that kind of stuff. Beyond that, like we had talked a bit before we got into the Wormhole crunch about like, like maybe we do like a game a month or a game every 2 months or something like that, and really just like try our hand at a few things. And obviously not like making full products, but just like really honing something down as a team, because that's how we found Wormhole. I think we can find some more cool projects doing that. I know I'm working on something on the side that I'm about to kind of bring Jeff and Ren in. I've talked to them about. It's the terminal game. And we have like, I don't know, I have a notebook, and I'm sure Jeff does too.
Filled with ideas.
Yeah, full of stuff that we want to work on. Basically have the next year, 10 years planned.
But most of my ideas are just like, is this good enough to like have Than hyperfixate on it? Most of the time, no.
Is Than gonna enjoy like, working on this?
Yeah, that's usually where it comes down to. I don't know any of the coding stuff. I'm like purely on the like art and music stuff. So when it comes to actually making the game, it's like, Than, you gotta be in. It's a team effort for sure.
Than, you mentioned in like making a game every couple months. I'm blanking on the studio name, but there is like, it might be a small team that.
What's it called? Pumpcake Militia?
I think so. They made Shotgun King, the final checkmate. Pump out games every couple months, it seems like. And sometimes
Static is one of my favorite games.
Sometimes
the spider one
pop off and they.
Yeah.
Is that the inspiration for the maybe every 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was where I got that. At least that like. Yeah, that's where my inspiration for it came from. I can't speak to Jeff and Ren, but like that's, yeah, they're a huge inspiration. Again, I love Aesthetic. It's like we're playing that while working on Wormhole, and it was like, oh, this like just nails it. And they did it in a month. Like, what the hell? Yeah, no, they're huge inspirations. We love that kind of stuff. I played another game. It was made by Bryce. I can't his last name. He's doing 100 or is it 1,000 Caliber Contracts, but he also made what was that game? I'm looking it up right now because I want to speak to it. 500 Caliber Contracts is the game that he's working on, Bryce Butcher. But he made a game called Fatum Batella. It's this weird PS1 horror game where you're just walking through, and the whole process is you're just pouring liquids into this well, and it's telling you what that did to the world by doing so. And it's so small scope, you can finish it in like 2 hours. And I remember playing it and just having this experience of like, this person knows scope. Like the UI was janky at times, like the movement was weird, but the experience was captured exactly how I think he wanted to do it. And like, I have so much respect for that as a developer, of like understanding like what you can do to get your vision across exactly and be like, this is my point. Anyways, I got to move on. Wormhole was not that. Wormhole was like, let's polish it to the max. But I'm really excited for our next few projects, just to be like, what can we do like within our scope to get like the message across of what we're trying to do with the game? Not to say that's going to be our procedure for everything, but that's why I love devs putting out things once a month. I have so much respect for that. It's an incredible thing, and I think it's like one of the purest forms of development.
And one of the things that I know Than and I have talked about a lot is like having Wormhole, we let it talk to us, which sounds tacky, but like,
oh yeah,
we played the game a lot, and then we didn't put anything in that didn't fit. Than, do you want to talk about this more? I'm butchering this, but...
No, you're doing... No, it's pretty much, like, exactly it. Jeff came to us with Wormhole in, like, a PowerPoint presentation, which are, like, revered amongst our team because they're always so good. And he presented Wormhole as, like, the concept that it is now, which is it's Snake. You play as a planet-eating worm. You have the wormholes you can travel through, and there's aliens. And that was, like, the whole pitch. I think there might have been one or two more things like added onto it.
A cowboy.
Like, we didn't have perks.
I fought for the cowboy, for the record. I fought for the cowboy. Originally, it was just it was one worm, and then you would pick things up, sort of like a shmup where like you pick up different weapons. Like, oh, you got the shotgun now. So one of those would be like dash. One of them would be mm-hmm. Yeehaw. I think there was like freeze time, which just didn't work at all. But yeah, Yeehaw was like, for the record, make that clear.
It's very, yeah, and it was very important to the whole thing. And so, yeah, we have like the original build, and it's just like a room, it's Snake, it's janky, it only has like basic Snake input, so like it doesn't feel as good. There's no like time dilation, there's no effects, there's no like mechanics that really drive you to play more, and it was just marathon mode in an empty stage. And we were just doing it for the mini game, like we were just like getting it out. And every time we did something, it was like, yeah, we let the game talk to us. We were like, what is this asking for right now? Well, I'm dying a lot to something that I'm not happy with. So how do we add something that like adds a cooldown or like a coyote time before this? Or like, hey, it would be cool if we had like different levels with different walls, and we have black and white. I wonder if we could like just change the palettes. And like just every step of the way after the initial presentation, like we didn't have... I mean, we do have a game development document, but it was more like we worked in reverse. We just wrote down the things that we did as like the systems. We didn't really work ahead in that direction. Jeff would message me with an idea, and I would say, that's a ridiculous idea, that won't work. And I would do it, and I would say, God, that's brilliant. Every time, without fail, Jeff does that. Every single time, I'm like, that's not going to work. And then it works so good. Yeah, that was the process. That was the past few years. Even up into things like leaderboards, which have been like one of the biggest selling points of the game, was just us being like, I don't know, we don't really care about the score that much. We just want people to like play this game. And then like, I think a week before Next Fest, I was like, I could put leaderboards in. I bet you I could do it. And then Jeff was like, all right, do it. And we did, and that was like the biggest driver for the demos. And we're like, oh, and we got reviews being like, these guys brought scores back to arcade games. Like, this is like, it's so refreshing to see a game that prioritizes score. And we're like, yeah, that's definitely what we
prioritize this.
Yeah,
I mean, we did initially, like, that was a big thing, because it was like, we're making an arcade game that would fit into like 1979, and it just disappeared, sort of like a Polybius type situation. Mm-hmm. But like, we did all this implementation, and then we gave it to some playtesters, and I wrote like a Google Docs of like, do you care about the score? And everyone said no. So we're like, okay, mm-hmm. well, maybe we poured all our eggs into the wrong basket. But
and that's why we don't listen to playtesters.
No,
we love our playtesters.
Yeah. But when it came to like putting the leaderboards in, suddenly there was this shock of like, mm-hmm. oh, wait, I'm competing against other people, not just my own high score. So yeah. It all sort of like had this nice arc of like, oh no, we did it. We did this for a reason. Yeah. So.
And that's what we mean about like games, the game speaking to us, like every single step of the way. It just became very clear, because we're both very intimate with the game. I think that's the best way to describe it, is like, we know everything about what is happening, and the collision space, and like all these little things, and the frames, and like you get this like language out of it, and you can see the incompleted sentences, and that's where we fill it in. So the game developed itself in a lot of ways. We just kind of, and that sounds super pretentious and artsy, but I think that flows to a lot of development. I think that's just how it's done, is you have a strong premise and you work through it.
I'll also say like, I'm okay at games, but like, I'm not amazing at Wormhole. So a lot of like the features were just me. Well, hey, please. But like a lot of the features were just me being like, okay, I just keep dying to this one thing. Like, I feel like if I was this elite, like giga gamer, the game would not be the same. Cause like, mm-hmm. I would have just got really good. But instead it's like the little things that I hit. I'm like, actually, let's just tweak this a little bit.
And no, that really added to the experience, because people talk about how hard this game is. And yes, it's hard. We made it difficult. But we wanted to make it as fair as possible. And if you play Nokia Snake, it's like, it doesn't give you a lot. It is a block moving at a consistent speed, and like any mistake is punished. And we wanted Wormhole to be a very clear experience. and kind of read your mind a bit. So we spent a lot of time on the input system, a lot of time. And like Jeff would be like, oh, this feels a bit weird. And it's like, well, that's because you're missing. But the answer isn't like, oh, get better sometimes. It's like, oh, the star trails are hard to follow. What if we like snuck in an autopiloting technique? And a lot of people don't know that. You can autopilot through the star trails.
Oh.
Yeah. So you can let go of the controller and it'll do it.
That's good to know.
Dropping some secrets. Here we go.
We do that because, the players can move through it and feel like, oh, I just made the star trail. And it's like, yeah, we helped with that. But that's with everything. Hitting walls, you have like a full second to like disengage. And people use that in strategies now to like guide themselves properly. U-turning, original Snake doesn't have U-turning where you can hit the back direction and it rotates you back according to the safest direction it can find. There's so many little input things that we wanted to make it so it was like a complete, like, what you're thinking you want to do is what's going to happen in the game, and there's no barrier between that. The mistakes happen when you think wrong, when you say, I'm going to go here, and that was a mistake. So anytime we see someone make a misinput, they're like, oh, I messed up, I did a misinput, yeah, and we're like, that's fair, and like, yeah, that was a misinput, but how do we reduce that as much as possible on our end? Because we want it to be hard in a way that feels like, it's your brain doing something wrong, not your hands. So I think to Jeff's point exactly, like, we aren't pure elite gamers. Like, as much as I love Dark Souls, I don't abide to the get good often. I think you play the game your way. And you let the game work with you to solve those issues. You can have difficulty in some areas, but when it comes to interfacing with the game, we like to remove as much barriers as possible.
And that's a thing with like arcade games as well, where we wanted to sort of modernize the approach, where a lot of old games, they're just like, yeah, you just got to get good. I'm sorry, man. But with this new like take, we wanted to make it as accessible to people as possible, which we're still working on, so if anyone has any ideas for us, we'd love to hear them, because we're always looking for some feedback in that regard. But yeah, just like not just modernizing an arcade game by like bringing it to Switch and stuff, but like taking those same philosophies, but like reworking them a little bit to make it more fun to play and more like accessible for people.
Oh, 100%. Those old arcade games, they were so hard just so you'd put more money into them. That's what I'm saying. I kind of believe it.
And there's something beautiful about that. I love getting to like level 5 and being like, why is this so hard all of a sudden?
Being able to learn from those things too. Like, it's really hard, but that's because I did this. So next time I'm going to do this. And I feel like we have a lot of those same philosophies. They're just a little bit more forgiving. So,
like, we talk about it as a roguelike, but it is primarily an arcade game, because I think the big difference between a roguelike and an arcade game, I mean, a roguelite, I think, is the modern roguelike kind of structure these days. You can't go to your friend's house and open up Hades and be as good as you were at your home, because you have a bunch of unlocks and you have all these things that you've built on your character, and that's awesome, and I love those games. I play those games all the time. But there's something pure about an arcade game where you can go to any machine and have the same level of mastery you did at another machine. So that's been really enjoyable, is like seeing people try it at different people's houses with different controllers. Like, we have on the launch party, we brought this guy out and we're playing with it, and it was a lot of fun. We're like, this is what we designed it for.
For audio listeners, it's the 8-bit Doe, what is it, Fight Stick?
The Fight Stick, yeah, the arcade stick.
Someone cares for the audio listeners.
Yes. Jeff's incredible for that. But yeah, we wanted it to be that arcade experience of, I mean, our dream is like having an arcade cabinet. Like, we would love to build an arcade cabinet or two and put them around Ottawa and Toronto and like move them to different sites. We have the Toronotrons in Toronto, at Toronotrons in Toronto. And they put some great indies on there, so we're hoping to get into that one day. But yeah, having our own machines would be like one of the coolest things, because it's exactly what we built it for. We built it to be a modern arcade machine game.
It's actually something we put in some of the like pitch notes for publishers. It's like, but our pie in the sky, hey, help us make an arcade machine. So
yeah,
I mean, I imagine it can't be like super expensive for an arcade machine, right?
Enter
the Gungeon did it.
$3. $5.
That's true.
Which is like a bit
or House of the Gungeon.
Yeah, House of the Gungeon.
Yeah.
I mean, if I saw Wormhole in an arcade machine, I'd be happy.
Yeah, me too. Exactly. And it's just like, yeah, it's so built for that. And Jeff really captured this vibe. Again, you said Polybius earlier, of like this arcade cabinet that's like been doomed and like you are not supposed to be playing this, and there's something like off about it. Like it's slightly evil. It's taking your soul as you play it. And yeah, we kind of tried to capture that vibe while also being cute and fun.
A big one was like Kid Dracula, like the Konami game, where it's just Castlevania, but there's something so charming about it. And like it's sort of for kids, but at the same time, like you're killing like skeletons and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's got this sort of like spooky aura to it, but also like it's really charming.
Mass genocide on a galactic scale.
Exactly.
There are people on the planet, so that's canon. Sorry, should I say that? That's not real.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
It's real. It's real.
We even were going to do like little particle effects at one point of like little UFOs evacuating the planets.
It
might be a bit dark.
They're there. It's just we couldn't make a pixel small enough. So
yeah,
they're there. They're there.
They're there. They're
great.
Just,
now I feel like a monster playing Wormhole.
Mm-hmm. Just get to the finale.
I still haven't been able to clear standard mode. I got to like
wait till the next update. It gets really cool. We just like upped the effects. So that update's out next week.
I got to level like 13. And I was playing late at night. I was
pretty
like, all
good.
Right. I was like, this is the one, man. This is the one. And then my brain slipped for like a second. And then I was like, oh, damn it. And then I just, Ouroboros. Yeah. And I was like, okay, well.
Ouroboros.
What a horrible voice. Oh, my God.
That's your voice in there.
It's honestly incredible. That's what I fought for.
It's the fact that, like, for 3 years now, I've just been telling myself what I've done wrong is just, like, it's torture at this point. Nosebleed. Okay. It's like, God damn, I know, all right?
Oh, good. There was one point where he wanted to take, like, he wanted to lessen the amount of times it says wormhole. And I was like, I'm putting my foot down. No, there's no way. We're drawing the line there. Like, I walk. But, like, we kept it in. And, he's got a golden voice. I don't think he knows that.
You do have a pretty golden voice. The wormhole, that was one of those things. It's like you guys mentioned with Polish. Playing it on the Steam Next Fest when I never heard of the game before, and I was like, Pocket Moon Games, who the hell are these people? It's just every little thing you can tell was made with a lot of love. Every little sound effect, every little time you bump into a wall, everything, even the wormhole, all of it was just made.
Wormhole.
Yeah, look at that.
I don't know how he does it. It's actually crazy because he'll come back to me like I'll see him like in Discord working on whatever music apps he's working on at the day, and he comes back and he's like, "Hey, I made this," and he just drops like a 4-minute absolute banger of a track where I'm like, "Did Toby Fox make this? Like, what is happening right
the
now?"
Music. Oh my God.
Incredible music.
Thank you.
I said this before to Jeff. It's like, the one thing I never burned out of working on Wormhole was the music. Like, I would have the music on at all times. And when you're working on a game for thousands and thousands of hours and you're hearing the same track over and over again, you usually go insane. But I kept it on. Like, it was, like, so, like, just... I never got sick of it. Which is, like, the passing the Koji Kondo test of music. Anyway, shout out to Jeff. I wish he was here right now.
Maybe someday.
Maybe someday. No,
I'm Rob.
He's incredible. No. He's Rob.
Deep
Rob
cut Odisco. For the people who didn't get to hear the beginning.
For the blooper reel.
Well, that was honestly all the questions for Wormhole and then some. You guys absolutely killed it. So the last thing I like to do with every podcast, I have forgotten a few times, but I won't forget this time. And it's if you, the developers, have any questions for me, the guy that plays video games sometimes.
Where did you get the Snoopy in the back?
The one on the motorcycle?
Is he Joe Cool? Is that his name? Joe Cool?
The one on the motorcycle? I got that at the West Edmonton Mall. It was one of those stores that imports like all goods from like South Korea or something, and they're all like marked up for like $2 extra. It was some... You're not the first person to ask about that either.
He's good. He's cool. He's cool. He's a cool guy.
Got him from the mall.
That's awesome. When you're playing roguelikes, what are you looking for? because you are an expert on that kind of stuff.
Oh God, I don't even think I'm that much of an expert. But
why do you literally like roguelike so much?
Yeah, yeah.
The endless.
What's your deal?
My issue, the endless replayability is something that is just, when it's done well, I just fall in love with it. Like Enter the Gungeon is my favorite one of all time. Simple graphics, soundtrack is pretty top tier. They have a wide variety of ways to play the game without just buffing you directly. Like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Splinter Fate just came out. Great game. But the variety is not really there, and the meta progression is more simple. Like, it's like, hey, congrats, you do more damage now. Hey, you have a little bit more health now. But then there's something like Gungeon, the crazy comparison, where the runs change because they have 8,000 different weapons that you can pick from, all these fun little secrets. So I guess it's, I like the variety on top of just good gameplay. Which, you know, Wormhole has, you know, simple variety with three different worms, but the gameplay carries Wormhole right there to be easily replayable.
Good answer.
Correct.
Correct.
No, that's second cool. answer.
Yeah, I love Gungeon.
Is that Doom helmet for sale? I'll take it. It's okay.
I'll just take it. Maybe sometime in the future. You are in Canada, so it's more doable. I got that one from limited run games.
Nice. Yeah, it's the Doom 64 one.
I think so. I just saw it on sale and I was like, I want that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Doom is another game that was a big influence.
Oh, it's a wormhole. Oh,
yeah.
There's a deep just cut right there.
That's the original, but just like 2016, yeah, just like ripping and tearing. That's all you're doing in Wormhole.
That's the latest Doom I've played, actually. It was fantastic.
Oh my God, play Eternal. You have to play Eternal.
I know, I need to play
Eternal. It's really good.
I've had it on Steam for like 3 years, and I'm just like, I'll get to it.
Let's cut this short. You go play it. Go play it right now.
Do you play Risk of Rain?
I have played 10 hours of Risk of Rain Returns and 16 hours of Risk of Rain 2, which, so basically, no, if you ask a Risk of Rain fan, I've never played it. It's same with Binding of Isaac. I've played that for 30 hours, and people are like, that's, you're irrelevant.
I think if you're looking for a variety, I think you might like to visit Risk of Rain 2.
That game is insane. That.
We'll have to play sometime because what kicked it off for us, it has like artifacts, which are like the Halo skulls. So you pick up these artifacts and they're like deep secrets in the game to get them. And they change like the entirety of the run in like just a crazy way. Like enemies will, or twice as many enemies spawn, or like fall damage kills and like these things. But one of my favorite ones is instead of getting a random perk, you can pick one. From each chest based off of the rarity you get, and it's great for practice runs, but it's also great if you just want to like see how insane the game can get. Is you just pick up one perk and just stack it 100 times, and all of a sudden enemies can't even spawn because they show up and disappear because you're running around with Little Disciple. And it's just like, yeah, highly recommend if you sit with some friends and are just like, hey, I want to see what it's like to become God for a bit. I mean, I don't need to shout out Risk of Rain.
I didn't even know you could do that in Risk of Rain. I thought it was always just a random.
It's got everything. So much to it. That was like one of my personal biggest inspirations for Wormhole. I was talking about it all the time during development. I was playing it all perks. The time. Yeah, stacking perks is huge. I love that. And all of them just being like something just a bit interesting. Like it gives you a little bit and you use it to like, every game is so different from the last one. I think it has, like, if you're looking for variety, that has, I think Gungeon probably has the most variety of any roguelike ever. It's incredible for that, but Risk of Rain probably comes second to that. Like it's a good one for that.
I feel like people would probably think a lot of the like perk stacking would come from Vampire Survivors, but no, Risk of Rain.
I think we started Wormhole and the perk system before Vampire Survivors was out even.
Yeah, Vampire Survivors just dropped out of nowhere. And just like everyone
came out of nowhere.
And then everyone was like,
there's a lot of games that came out of nowhere and were like, oh, like Bellatro and UFO 50 and Vampire Survivors.
Well, UFO 50 has been in development for like...
Yeah, it's been in development for a while. But like it popped into the public consciousness.
Right, right.
And we were like, oh, this is like exactly... Like this looks like... We've been inspired by them, but I think they had like a similar train of thought, especially UFO 50, incredible game.
I mean, all of those games are great. Like, play a ton of Balatro.
The whole world plays Balatro now because everyone... The
whole world plays
My Balatro. Favorite thing was when people that didn't know about Balatro and it got, like, the nomination, people were like, a stupid card game got nominated over Silent Hill 2. Then they played it and they're like, I'm so sorry. Yeah. I didn't realize it was so good.
It's so number go up in, like, the best way. And the juice is so good. Yeah, it's an incredible game. Incredibly developed. So, I mean, I don't need to say this. It's brilliant. It's just brilliant.
It's a great game. Hot take from Pocket Moon Games.
Hot take from Pocket Moon Games. Yeah, Balatro,
pretty good.
Only pretty good, they say. We'll talk more at 11 o'clock. Well, that's... That's the whole podcast right then and there. If you guys have any last words you want to say, sell anything, go for it now.
I mean, the obvious. Thank you so much for having us here.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for championing us. Really, we couldn't.
Yeah. Hey.
Uh-huh. Nice. Yay. We did it. Tune in next week.
No, I'm not going to call anyone else.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Wishlist Wormhole, everyone. If you like the game, review it. If you don't the game,
please review it. We need more reviews.
Yes. It's hard to get reviews for a game. But yeah, thank you. And yeah, we're excited to keep watching Burr. And yeah, just wait to see what we come up with next.
Guys, buy Wormhole now. Thanks for listening or watching this episode of Interview in Indies. Big shout out again to Jeff and Than for taking some time out of their busy day to talk Wormhole and everything indie games with me. Make sure you buy Wormhole on Steam or Switch. And if you're a developer and want to get on this show, be sure to shoot me an email or message me on social media. Thank you again for listening or watching, and we'll see you next time.